focus today on housing.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, good morning. I'm Steve Chiatakis. New construction of homes and apartments fell to a record low last month. The Commerce Department says construction dropped 16% in January. That's much more than economists had expected. Applications for building permits, which is considered a good barometer of future activity, also fell to a record low. But applications for home loans shot up 45%, according to the Mortgage Bankers Association. Apparently, a lot of people are looking at refinancing. Fixed rates have dropped below 5%. President Obama turns his attention to homeowners today. He's set to lay out a plan to reduce mortgage payments to help those who are struggling. He'll do that in Arizona, where foreclosures are a big problem. Renee Gattel reports.
Phoenix home prices have dropped a third over the last year. Many families are stuck with homes that are worth less than the mortgage they hold. Some are even resorting to using their credit cards to pay the mortgage. Many struggling homeowners hope President Obama's plan will help reduce their monthly payments. But there are skeptics, people like Anthony Sanders, a finance professor at Arizona State University.
If one foreclosure requires $150,000 to avoid, multiply that times the number of subprime loans, we're talking about a gigantic price tag. So it's a tough nut for Obama to try to crack.
Obama will take a crack at that tough nut when he takes the stage at Dobson High School in Mesa. In Phoenix, I'm Renee Gattel for Marketplace.
Some stocks are starting the day in positive territory. Others not so much. Markets are up here stateside. The Dow is up about 0.25%. NASDAQ up about 0.5%. European stock markets are moving lower this morning after a big sell-off yesterday. Bank shares are being hit again on fears of economic turmoil in Eastern Europe. From London, here's Stephen Beard.
Some analysts warn that Eastern Europe is on the brink of economic collapse, like the Asian meltdown a decade ago. During the recent boom in Europe, Western banks poured more than $1 trillion into the eastern part of the continent. But now, strapped for cash, they're pulling out. Foreign bank lending has slowed to a trickle. East European currencies are sliding fast. The Hungarian forint and the Polish zloty have slumped. The solvency of some governments is in question. Graham Mather is with the European Policy Forum.
Markets are undoubtedly now concerned that some governments aren't going to be able to pay their debts, and that is going to have real economic effects in Eastern Europe.
Every East European economy is expected to shrink this year, some by more than 10%. As a result, some of West Europe's biggest banks could face further heavy losses. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
Listening to the Morning Report on this Wednesday, February 18th, 2009, at marketplace.org. First, Bernie Madoff's $50 billion Ponzi scheme. Now, flamboyant businessman R. Allen Stanford's alleged $8 billion fraud. While investors lost billions in these frauds, the true cost could be even higher. Here's Marketplace's Dan Gretsch.
The Securities and Exchange Commission says R. Allen Stanford lulled investors with the promise of safe, high returns. And it worked. For 15 years. Tom Adjemi is a securities law attorney in Houston.
The old saying goes that you don't know who's swimming naked until the tide goes out. And you really don't know who's poorly managing money until people start trying to withdraw their money.
People are trying to withdraw their money from financial institutions because they no longer trust them.
The loss in confidence tears away at the fabric, the financial fabric of the country. And you have a situation where it's hard to get investments. When you don't have investments, it's hard to build businesses. When you can't build businesses, you can't provide jobs. So there are clearly larger repercussions to all this.
The SEC has frozen the assets of Stanford and three of his companies. But Adjemi predicts few Stanford investors will see their money again. I'm Dan Gretsch for Marketplace.
A new report out today from the nonprofit Project on Government Oversight finds the Federal Drug Administration, the FDA, isn't doing enough to guard patients' health when it comes to life-saving medical equipment. From Washington, Ronnie Radbill reports.
Saying the FDA is playing a high-stakes gamble with patients' lives, the Project on Government Oversight, or POGO, wants better regulation of some high-risk medical devices. They include pacemakers, replacement heart valves, and internal defibrillators. The FDA Center for Devices and Radiological Health is charged with overseeing the equipment's safety before it's used, but POGO says that's not happening. Dr. Ned Fader authored POGO's report.
Top officials of this part of the FDA decided that the labs would monitor themselves for safety.
Peter Laurie with the nonprofit consumer advocacy group Public Citizen says the lack of oversight is an ongoing problem.
As much as we worry about the safety of drugs and the way inspections are done in the drug area, we have an even greater reason to be concerned about the way medical devices are inspected and the way they are approved in this country.
The FDA says it hasn't read the Project on Government Oversight report and isn't prepared to comment. In Washington, I'm Ronnie Radbill for Marketplace.
Greenwich Avenue in Greenwich, Connecticut has been called Rodeo Drive East. It was once home to mom-and-pop shops and a Woolworths. Then Saks Fifth Avenue and Tiffany moved in. Greenwich is known for its hedge fund and Wall Street money, but now that some of the money has vanished, several retailers are moving out too. Marketplace's Amy Scott took a walk down the avenue to see how it's faring in the new economy.
The first signs that all is not well on Greenwich Avenue are the space available and moving notices in store windows. Two doors down from one empty space, Marty Novell manages Little Eric. It's a high-end children's shoe store just off the avenue. He shows me a pair of knee-high black boots.
It's a fashion boot. Looks like mommy's boot or, you know...
So how much would something like that go for?
I think it's $169.
Only $85 on sale. Novell says this is the first time in his 6 years as manager that business hasn't grown.
Some of our cruise shoes and sandals aren't selling as well because a lot of people, I hear, are not taking as many vacations.
Up the street, David Goldsmith runs Manfredi Jewels. He says as many as half his customers are tied to the finance industry. They're not spending as much these days.
There are clients who last year, or 2007 for Christmas season, may have spent, let's say, $30,000. That's a round number. And this year, maybe they spent $10,000 or $15,000. Still an extraordinarily generous gift, but not at the scale that it was last year.
Nearby, a new restaurant aims to attract a newly thrifty clientele. Townsend Wentz is Morello Bistro's executive chef.
Sort of the market that we're looking at is being able to provide great service and great food, but at a reasonable price. And it's never been more appropriate than right now in the economy.
So what exactly is reasonable in Greenwich?
Well, an entree for us is average about $25, $26.
It's all relative, I guess. It's easy to poke fun at Greenwich, which is pricey even when it's on sale. But the avenue is having real problems. High rents and the consumer slowdown have driven several national chains away. Lynn Lavery sits on the town board.
The major retailers that have left are The Gap. We've also just lost Ann Taylor, Borders. Banana Republic is gone. That's another one that just left in the past couple of months.
On the bright side, there is more parking, and Lavery hopes the vacancies will allow new locally owned stores to move in. In Greenwich, Connecticut, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
Tomorrow, Amy shows us how the hedge fund meltdown is driving down real estate prices in Greenwich. General Electric reports its CEO, Jeff Immelt, is giving up his giant bonus. Immelt could have gotten $12 million in performance-based pay. The company's board is keeping his salary at $3.3 million a year. Immelt is still entitled to performance share units, which can be converted into GE stock. The Federal Reserve says industrial production fell 1.8% last month. Some of that is attributable to auto plant closings and a stymied auto industry. The Obama administration continues to look at what it can do. GM and Chrysler, meantime, are asking for more money, about $22 billion in additional help from the government. To get it, they're going to have to convince the administration's auto team it's the best course of action. From North Carolina Public Radio, here's Marketplace's Janet Babin.
President Obama's car task force includes Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner and Ron Blum, a former consultant to the United Steelworkers of America. They'll have to decide whether to honor GM and Chrysler's request for more government bailout money or to drive the companies into bankruptcy or liquidation. Professor Jack Donahue at Harvard's Kennedy School of Government says the team's first question should be,
what's the public benefit versus the public cost of trying to save these companies? The tough thing is that Americans are used to being sentimental about their cars and about their car companies. We can't imagine a future without Chevy, without Dodge.
But he says now is no time to get sentimental. The White House has said that more will be required of creditors, suppliers, labor, and auto executives. And GM and Chrysler have promised more pain, 50,000 more job cuts, more reductions in U.S. plants and car brands. I'm Janet Babin for Marketplace.
The purpose, of course, of all these plans and loans is to bolster American car making. But commentator Robert Reich has thoughts about what that really means.
It's said that America can't afford to lose its auto industry. But the big three are shrinking so fast, cutting payrolls and shutting factories, that we're already losing much of GM, Ford, and Chrysler. Last year, GM said it may have to cut its U.S. workforce by a whopping 30,000, and its plan to qualify for additional bailout money foresees a company that's a miniature of its former self. But why should we assume that the big three constitute the American auto industry anyway? Foreign-owned automakers producing cars here in the United States now employ directly or indirectly hundreds of thousands of Americans. And at the rate the big three are shrinking, even if they're bailed out, foreign automakers may soon employ more Americans than the big three. Meanwhile, the big three have gone global. A Pontiac G8 shipped by GM from Australia contains far less American labor than a BMW X5 assembled in the United States. General Motors' European subsidiaries include Opel and Saab. Ford also has operations around the world. It even owns Volvo. I'm not arguing against an auto bailout, but its purpose ought to be to help American auto workers keep their jobs, regardless of whether they work for GM or Toyota or anyone else. Or if they lose their jobs, help them get new ones that pay almost as well. Yet we seem to be on the road to doing exactly the opposite, paying the big three billions of taxpayer dollars to keep them afloat while they cut tens of thousands of American jobs and slash wages. We're transferring money from taxpayers to big three shareholders for no apparent reason other than the big three are headquartered in America. Let's get real. The big three have blown it for years, designing cars that an increasing number of Americans don't want to buy. This fierce downturn is pushing them toward reorganization under bankruptcy. There's no reason for taxpayers to foot any of this bill unless the big three agree to keep their workers employed while they try to turn themselves around. The American auto industry is not the big three. It's Americans who make automobiles.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich teaches public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Share your thoughts with us at marketplace.org. And our online host and blogger Scott Jagow writes about this, about McDonald's online. The fast food giant is hoping to make its McNuggets a major hit in China. The company plans to open about 500 stores there over the next 3 years. McDonald's has fared better than many in this economic fallout. In China, the most popular eats there at McDonald's include the Filet-O-Fish, Double Cheeseburger, McPuff, which we think is a pizza, and the Mala Pork Burger. Yummy. Thanks for being with us. In Los Angeles, I'm Steve Chiotakis. Have a great day.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.